An ode to the month of March. Ladies and gentlemen, March is upon us. You think you'll win your office pool? You know that all your brackets will bust and leave you looking like a fool. The number of teams is 68, each with the goal of a Final Four. Teams like Memphis, Florida, and Michigan State will all attempt to run the floor. When you turn on your TV this Thursday morn, you won't be watching Garrett and I's beloved Huskers of Corn. They took an L, a different kind than in Liberty, Lipscomb, Louisville, and UNLV. If what you wanted to see was a Bulldog logo, you'll have Gonzaga, Mississippi State, and Yale. But keep your eyes out for the New Mexico Lobos, along with the WCC's St. Mary's Gales. If you wanted a sleeper to make a run, UNC Wilmington could be fun. The St. Francis Red Flash and the Omaha Mavericks could make a splash, or they could throw up bricks. Watch out for A-teams along the ride, like Auburn and the Alabama Crimson Tide. Akron and the West Virginia Mountaineers are likely no match for the Tennessee Volunteers. This month always brings us fun nicknames, but only one can take all the fame. BYU and Houston are both called the Cougars, but no one knows why Indiana's called the Hoosiers. At the end of the day, everybody loves hoops. BYU, VCU, and us here at K-True. We hope your team is the one that doesn't fall. So let's roll the music, and let's talk some ball.
This is K-True on 96.1, KTRU LP Houston, and streaming live on your phone and on the web at ktru.org.
Happy holidays, H-Town! That time of year is upon us. I'm Ian Kleppinger, and welcome back to our special edition of Against the Grain on K-True 96.1 FM, the Rice University student-run radio show where we break down everything going on in the world of Rice athletics and the broader sports scene from across the city of Houston, and today especially across the great nation of the United States. You can listen to us every Saturday at 8 a.m. right here on K-True 96.1 FM, or stream all of our episodes anytime by searching for K-True Sports on iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Amazon Music. To stay in the loop, go ahead and follow us at ktrue.sports on Instagram and at ktrue.sports on TikTok. We've always got exciting stuff in the works like today, and we do not want you to miss out. If you have a question for us about anything sports-related or not, we talk about a lot of random stuff on the show, please feel free to DM us on either of those platforms or drop us a note at ktruesports@gmail.com. That's ktrusports@gmail.com, all lowercase. We want to know what you want to know so we can answer it on the air. Throughout the next hour, you'll be hearing from a whole team of student hosts. I'll be getting us started with our first segment, Around the Hedges. Here at Rice University, it is common to say that the greater city of Houston is beyond the hedges. So to start off each episode of Against the Grain, we go around the hedges for a quick review of the biggest sports moments from both Rice and the city of Houston. So this week, we had a lot of interesting things happen in terms of Rice athletics. We're actually going to start off on the tennis court before we get into the hoops breakdowns you all came for. Rice women's tennis has continued their stellar season. They beat UTSA, their first conference match. The UTSA is ranked number 71 in the country. Rice beat them 4-2 last Saturday. Nathessa Selvarage and Fernanda Martinez both won their singles matches 6-1, 6-2. Martinez and Daria Schwartzman won their doubles match 6-2. Those pairs were the best performances for Rice and led them to that 4-2 victory. They followed up in the middle of the week, taking down the Princeton Tigers 4-0. Those Tigers were ranked number 63rd in the country at the time of that match. Divna Ratkovic won 6-1, 6-1, and the aforementioned Fernanda Martinez won 6-1, 6-3 in her singles match. Another exciting tennis news, sophomore Daria Schwartzman won the American Athletic Conference Women's Tennis Player of the Week recognition. They won their doubles match versus UTSA 6-2. She did with Martinez, mentioned that already. Also won a singles match against in that UTSA set. Martinez and Schwartzman won their doubles match versus Princeton, and then Schwartzman won her singles match 6-5, 6-1 versus Princeton's Alice Ferlito. So she went 4-for-4, teaming up with Schwartzman in doubles and winning both her singles matches against UTSA and Princeton this week. Rice is now ranked 43rd in the country per the ITA a very respectable ranking from their mid-major status, and they are 10-4 on the season and 1-0 in conference play after that decisive victory over the Roadrunners. Great stuff from the Owl women on the tennis court. Now we're moving it over to March's mojo, the hardwood. We're going to briefly talk about the Rice men. If you watched it, my condolences. They were the 12 seed in the AAC and had to play a kind of first round play-in game against the 13 seeded Charlotte 49ers. They dropped that game 64-61, ending their season despite having an 11 point lead at halftime, 34-23. I believe they led as much as 12 or 13 in the second half. So little disappointing that that lead was blown from the Owls. Heart-wrenching, as always, as a Rice fan. Kellen Amos was our leading scorer with 15 off the bench. Caden Powell also had 14, so not terrible performances from some of our guys there. Amos had struggled offensively as of late. He was knocking down some good shots, so it's not like there weren't any bright spots. It was a close game, had the lead for a while, especially in that first half. They finished their first season under former SMU Mustang Rob Lanier, 13-19, 4-14 in the conference. I doubt there is any postseason looking there for the Owls. Not to be that guy, but we kind of called that. We told you to keep an eye on the women and probably not hold out much hope for the men, and the men unfortunately proved us right. So we will stay tuned. Next fall, we'll hopefully still be around keeping you posted on everything that's going on with the Rice men and what will presumably be Rob Lanier's second season. Yeah, prayers up for the Owls. Moving over to the women's side, we told you to keep an eye out. We said they might make a run again. Very similar situation, and we were kind of right. They almost pulled it off. Little heartbreaking there as well, but much, much more respectable performance. Let's take you through a brief recap of the week in Rice women's basketball. They beat UAB on Sunday, 76-63. Anaya Alexis, who we shouted out on the show for her great play as of late, had 18 points. Dominique Ennis had a double-double, 12 and 10 boards. And Victoria Flores, who we have also shouted out multiple times on the show and told you to keep an eye on, had 11 points and 8 rebounds, almost joining that double-double club. They moved on to face the number one-seeded UTSA in the quarterfinals on Monday. They won that game by 4, 62-58. Malia Fisher dropped 16 after coming back from an injury in the middle of the season. Great turnaround from her. All the pieces were going together for the Owls. They went on to play Temple. Beat them 67-49 in the semifinals on Tuesday. That Malia Fisher had 18 points and 9 rebounds in that game, kind of carrying the team. And last night in the title game, well, I guess it'll be Thursday night by the time you're listening to this, in the title game against the Bulls of South Florida, they dropped 69-62. Susie Ngulofak was balling out in the paint, had 19 points and 7 boards as the center for the Owls. They finish at a perfect 500, 17-17, 7-11 in conference play with a tournament runner-up stat under their belt. I don't know what the postseason will look like, if they'll be in the women's NIT or anything else. Not a ton of media coverage on forecasting for those events. I know you're shocked, even on the men's side. But we will stay tuned. If not, we will be back with full coverage and previews in the fall when basketball season gets going again. In case you couldn't pick up from the intro, this is going to be a pretty basketball-focused episode. And I am actually pre-recording this ahead of time, as I will be out of town during our normal recording slot. But before I kick it to the squad to break down the greatest tournament in all of sports for you viewers at home, wanted to take a quick moment to throw out my thoughts, some of my March Madness picks. The way we're kind of formatting this, since we're releasing this before Selection Sunday, is everybody's going to have a favorite, a fraud, a Cinderella, and a dark horse, and then we're kind of going to talk about them as they come up and build our discussion around that. So my favorite that I want to shout out is Alabama. I know there's a lot of teams in the SEC, and I'm not an Alabama fan or anything, but they look so good. They've had tournament success as of late. They have the guys. They have the shooters. They have some defense, honestly. They have a great coach. They have proven that they can play with the best of the best in the SEC. I think the SEC is a gauntlet, and a lot of teams have taken beatings throughout the year. I think Alabama has proven that they can stick even ahead of a lot of those teams that are going to be tougher teams they might face in the tournament. Do not count out Bama as a Final Four or even a championship contender. I'm putting Purdue on fraud watch. I'm going to do it. They were on fraud watch with Zach Edey for a long time, the National Player of the Year. They finally proved the haters wrong last year, though it took them more than a few tries. And I think they're much worse this year. I think the Big Ten has been kind of weird. I think some of the teams that they have beat have been down. Shout out Michigan. I don't know that I trust them to even get through, make a lot of noise in the Big Ten tournament. I know some of those teams at the bottom of the Big Ten are kind of getting hot all out of nowhere. Iowa, especially, like, where did they come from? So keep an eye on Purdue. Would not be surprised if they end up as a Sweet 16 team. But if I got to put somebody on fraud watch, they're one of the first places my head went. Cinderella, I think the people where this team is going to get talked about a lot. Shout out to my parents, who are both proud alumni. The Drake Bulldogs won the Mount Missouri Valley again. They are presumably going to be like a 11 seed. I've heard talk of them being as high as an 8 or a 9 seed. So if you're a 1 seed and you have to face Drake in the second round after they win an 8-9 game, that's probably not the draw you want. I'm going to be honest. If I'm like Houston or Auburn, that's not what I'm looking for. That is a tough matchup. And so not saying that, you know, I'm not going to sit here and be like, yeah, Drake will beat Auburn. But like, I don't know. Stranger things have happened. That's all I'll say. My dark horse is going to be another Bulldog of Mississippi State. They have also been in that gauntlet of an SEC. I think they've gotten faded a lot. And like, no one's talking about them just because the SEC is so crowded. Even though I think they've kept up with teams like A&M, like Tennessee, like Missouri, like some of those, like that second tier of SEC teams that are like right below like the title contender tier. I think Mississippi State's been up there with the best of them. I think they're going to end up at like a 6 or a 7 seed. And they're probably as good as teams that are like seeded 4. So I think if you get them to win, like say they get like a 6 seed, I think them beating a 3 and/or a 2 and making a run that way after their first round matchup is not at all out of the picture for the Bulldogs. They've beaten teams of that caliber this year with some regularity as much as you can in that SEC gauntlet of a schedule. So that's my 2 cents on March Madness. My brackets are sometimes amazing and sometimes horrendous. My family will tell you that. So, you know, I wouldn't put money on any of these picks, but this is my 2 cents as someone who watches a decent amount of college basketball. It is the greatest time of the year. And so we're going to keep talking about it for an entire hour. Let's kick it to the boys and Chloe to break down everything you need to know about the madness in March.
Thanks, Ian. I am joined here today with Garrett, Andrew, Brandon, Max, and David. And we are so pumped to be talking basketball. It's March. It's madness. First, we're going to talk about who are the favorites. Who do we realistically think has a chance to actually win this thing? Garrett, who's the one team that you have your eye on?
First of all, it's March! We are so back, ladies and gentlemen. If you think I'm going to be paying attention anytime during class on Thursday or Friday, 2 weeks from now, you are so mistaken. Issues in financial reporting, I will not be listening. We are dialed in on the madness, and I am dialed in on one favorite in particular. One, the bluest of the bloods. The team, all right, put that look off your face, Andrew Fox. I'm just going to say it. Y'all know who it is. This is the team I always ride with. This is the team that's just simply different. I got the Duke Blue Devils going all the way this year. To me, it's not much of a question. I know there are some other good teams out there, and obviously anything can happen in March. They've beaten Auburn. They're 29-3. Their only losses are all to top 20 teams in the country. They have 7 Q1 wins. They're number one in KenPom. They're number one in the polls, and it's for a reason. This team is different, and they got a white boy from Maine who is really different, the best college basketball player since Zion Williamson, in my opinion. Any thoughts on that? Or are y'all just going to look at me and acknowledge that I'm right?
What are your thoughts on the fact if Cooper's hurt?
If Cooper was like out for the tournament, I would bail so quickly on this team. But I think he's going to be fine. I was watching it yesterday live when it happened, and I saw the fall, and I was like, oh, this is reminiscent of Kawhi in the 2017 playoffs landing on Zaza's foot. He looked bad, and he was, like, crying when they took him off in a wheelchair. But then he came back on the bench, like, 10 minutes later and was smiling, standing up when they were making threes. Like, I doubt he'll play the rest of the ACC tournament, because why would you? It literally does not mean anything for Duke. But I think he'll be good to go. Maybe not, if not the first game, at least by the second round, hopefully. And if Flagg is playing, like, I just don't see how you beat this team. I'll be real. Like, when they're firing on all levels, I think Malik Brown being out actually really hurts them. He's, like, super underrated. But they just have so many dudes that can do it to you, and they have so much size. Like, their starting lineup is Tyrese Proctor, 6'6", Tion James, 6'6", Cooper Flagg, 6'9", Con Kniffel, 6'7", and Common Malawak, 7'2". Like, that is an NBA-sized lineup. It is so hard to do anything offensively against this team because they are so long. No pause. Their defense, they have the number 4 defense in the country. And then at the same time, they have the number 2 offense in the country. And they shoot so well from 3. Like, Cooper Flagg should not be this good of a shooter in college basketball yet. He just turned 18, like, 2 months ago. And he's a certified sniper.
Colin Knipple, like, I don't think he's going to be an amazing NBA player. I don't know how he'll translate. But this dude is, like, the definition of a Duke basketball player, of a tough white dude with some size who can shoot from the outside and get downhill a little bit, and people hate him. I understand it. But he is good. Like, they just have so many dudes who can score. They can all play defense. Like, it's, you have to play almost perfectly to beat this team, and that's why they've only lost three games all season.
Do you think there's something to be said about, like, comparisons to the Duke teams when they had, you know, Zion, RJ?
I mean, I think there are comps there. Like, the Zion, RJ team, and Tyus Jones, right, like, a little bit different, and, like, I think there was more, like, star power and more, like, it was more of a top-heavy team. Like, I feel like this team has, like, even better depth. Like, Zion James is so good. He transferred in this year. He is so tough. Like, he doesn't have the opportunity to do that much because they have so many other guys who can do it. But, like, if you give him, like, the ball in an ISO situation, like, he can get you a bucket so easily.
I was going to say, same with, like, Isaiah Evans.
Yeah, slim.
Yeah.
He's tough as well. Like, this team, the Zion team, like, underperformed in March. Obviously, they went out in the Elite Eight. We were talking about it before the show. And they should have gone out earlier than that, the UCF. Like, I think the pressure on that team was, like, arguably a little different. Like, Duke is the favorite this year, yes, but I don't think, like, the team feels it as much. It's not like it's one of Coach K's last years. Like, this is the first, like, real contender I think they've had with Shire, and I feel like this is, like, the perfect time for them to, like, be primed to win a title.
A real quick hit here, and then we'll move on to another team.
Yeah.
I mean, I've heard really good things about Shire's schemes this year. Like, some games, them, like, having, like, per possession, like, 1.6 points because of, like, some of, like, the sets and schemes he's drawing up. Like, yeah, do you feel like he's the guy to take them far in March?
Yeah, so when Shire first got hired, like, his first 2 years at Duke before this season, I was, like, a little hesitant about him, to be honest. Like, I did not really know if he was, like, the one to replace Coach K. Like, I thought some of the stuff they were running was a little bit, not, like, basic, but, like, he was also limited by personnel, you could say. Like, their offense 2 years ago of, like, Kyle Filipowski and Derek Lively as, like, the go-to weapons is, like, anemic compared to what they have now, like, to be honest. So I had a lot of questions about Shire at first, but I think what he's done with this roster this year, like, they are all so in sync when they play. Like, this is a team you can tell that's, like, really drilled down, that, like, they know what's going on when they're on the court. They get into their sets and they just run. Like, I have a lot of faith in Shire. I have a lot of faith in the Blue Devils. And they're going to win it all. So who do y'all want to talk about now, you bums?
I think I can step in here and take us to the SEC. But not
shocker.
Yeah, of course. But maybe not to the team that everyone expects. I think Florida is going to have an incredible tournament this year. I think we talk about Duke's depth. I think Florida's the deepest team there is in college basketball. They can go four or five guys deep just in the front court, and then their back court is also loaded with three guards who can who've averaged 13 plus points a game. And I think while Duke excels, like, in that, like, in their defensive sets and how good they are on defense, I think Florida can win you games in more ways. I think we've seen them beat Alabama in a super high scoring, fast-paced game, but they've also been able to grind out a win against a super physical Auburn team who doesn't play the same super high-powered offensive style that Alabama does. And then the two things that really stand out to me about Florida, besides some of their players, are the way they offensive rebound and their defense. Their defense is top 10 in the country, but their offensive rebounding is number 3 in the country. And being able to get offensive rebounds and attack the glass consistently is something that's critical in the tournament when you're not always going to have your best shooting night. And to be able to make up for that with big depth and aggressive rebounding is something that a lot of teams won't be able to handle.
No, I think that's a good take. I think the SEC, like, has so many good teams coming, like, into the tournament where, like, you know, like, I feel like Auburn's a good pick. Florida's a good pick. Tennessee, honestly, is a good pick. The one team that I actually have some question marks about is Houston. And
the hometown.
I thought you were going to take a shot at an SEC team here. I didn't know you were coming.
So, the one thing with Houston, Like, obviously not SEC. But because I was just looking at it. I feel like the problem is they play too much of a style where they can get caught really easily. We've seen it happen in the past where you just need one team to get hot in one game, and then they're screwed because they play such a slow, like, defensive style of basketball where if they're not playing a really slow game, like, they find trouble winning.
Okay, I'm going to defend the Cougs here because I think they take way too much heat than they deserve. Yes, they haven't always had the greatest tournament results, but I think that this team's been too good for too long not to break through one of these times, and I think this year they're really poised to do it. Unlike in previous years, they actually are good from three. They shoot 39.8%, so almost 40% as a team, which ranks second across all schools. They have the experience. They're eighth in minute continuity. They've got three seniors in the starting lineup, and they have a dominant defense. I hear you about some of their weaknesses, but I think the way that they'd be most likely to get caught is because they set up so many traps and play such aggressive defense. Sometimes they let up threes. They give up a lot of looks from three, and although they usually keep teams to a relatively low field goal percentage from them, if a team catches fire, I think that that's one of the ways that they can get burnt. And sometimes their offense can stall out a little bit more than you would like, and they're not as good at getting to the free throw line. But I think, like, these are little dings on a team that I think otherwise is in really good shape. So I get the critique that, okay, this team isn't built for March. But I also think in every other sport, what do we say? Defense wins championships, right? Defense is what travels on the road. And while everyone's looking at the SEC, I think the Big 12 is probably the next best basketball conference. And they have just dominated.
Insane take for this year. The Big 12 is so mid this
season. It's top heavy.
It is not even top heavy.
Texas Tech and Houston are both.
Texas Tech is not good.
That's an insane take.
All right. You know what?
Okay. Okay. Wait. One last thing, and then we'll get off Houston.
Let me call an audible.
Okay. Like, they lost early to Auburn by 5. Okay. All of their other three losses have been in OT. Two were neutral site games to Alabama and San Diego State. Since those early losses, they've been 24-1 with a really strong strength of schedule. I just think that this team has been battle-tested. They've shown that they can show up to a variety of different teams in a variety of different settings. They play great defense. They can hit the three. They've got a lot of experience. I just think that this team gets critiqued a lot more than they deserve.
I think their loss to Alabama highlights exactly what I'm talking about, though, and their flaw in, like, pace of play. Alabama plays the fastest brand of basketball in the country by far. And, like, historically, like, they're at an all-time pace right now, which, like, come March is a bad thing. Like, I actually would not be shocked if Alabama gets caught in a game where a team's able to slow it down and is able to, like, steal a win from them. But it just highlights the fact that Houston, like, if they get caught by a faster team like, you know, Florida, Kentucky, Auburn, even St. John's.
The Johnnies, no, baby.
Like, if you look at the trapezoid of excellence based on, like, pace of play, University of Houston is basically as far, like, slow playing as you can be to be somewhat competitive in the tournament. And I think they're just going to get caught because
I agree 100%, Brandon. This is just the same story every year. They play so slow. And then come March, there's a team that gets hot from three or something and, like, gets a lead on Houston and they cannot come back because they don't generate offense. Like, what, Max?
I think there is something to be said to defend Chloe here about what Virginia did. We said the same.
I was going to bring up the same point. Yeah, I was going to bring up the same
things
point
about them for multiple years in a row. And then eventually they were the ones to get hot from three and they broke through and won the national title.
Okay, that is a fair take, but I'm going to be of the perspective. I think Virginia's run was 100% a fluke run because you saw they got upset as the one seed 2 years before
that
there.
That is true.
I would say that was the fluke.
Okay. Well, they got bodied in that game. They did not. That was not a close game. They got smacked by like 20.
And it literally that shows you exactly what can happen against Houston and the risks that you run when you play a slow paced like style of play. Like you can have a lower seed just get really hot from three and you're gonna lose the game every time.
I also want to say this: we're talking about Houston and like how they've been so hot recently. Houston, to start the season in non-conference play, the only three good teams they played, they lost to all of them. They lost to Auburn, they lost to Bama, and they lost to San Diego State. Literally all the other non-conference teams are so mid that they beat. And then they go on this big run in Big 12 play. Like, who cares? This is not like the Big 12 of old. This is just not the same like conference that y'all think it is. It is so much weaker this year.
Okay, well, you were just talking about how great Duke is for steamrolling a terrible ACC.
Okay. We want to talk about Duke. Who has Duke beaten? Duke has beaten the number one team in the country, Auburn. Duke plays people in non-conference and wins. Like, they have so many better Q1 wins than a team like freaking Houston. Let me pull it up right now. Duke has wins over Arizona. They have a win over Auburn, Louisville, Wake Forest, North Carolina, Clemson.
I mean, beating Wake Forest is no more impressive than like beating
Texas Tech, beating Auburn by six, and then being like super competitive with Kansas when Kansas was one in the country, super competitive with
Kentucky. Well, we beat Kansas twice, so
Houston was competitive with Auburn and Alabama.
Yes,
though,
and did they win?
Yeah, but that
they
was
win,
like,
but they were still competitive.
Months ago, it was
and
a competitive
did Duke win against
game.
Auburn?
They can win those games. They can
I think
win
so.
Those games.
I think so.
I agree. I think Duke is a great team. I'm just saying, I think. Yes, you can critique Houston. I still think that heading into the tournament, I like them a lot. I like them a lot.
I think Houston's cool. Like, I'm not saying they shouldn't be, like, one of the favorites, but I think when we compare them to, like, the other teams we were talking about, like, Max was talking about Florida. Florida is, like, the benefits of Houston of, like, being really good on defense with, like, so many fewer
flaws. They play
flaws.
Much faster.
Yeah, they like, pay fast. They play faster, and they have a good offense, and they have even more depth than Houston. Like, if you really are cool with Houston, just pick Florida in your bracket, and I promise you, you have a much better chance of winning. Yeah. Same with Duke. Duke is an elite defense and can actually do stuff on offense in the, like, last 3 minutes of the game.
See, like, I think, like, we're mentioning, oh, they had close games with Alabama, they had close games with Auburn. It just highlights the fact that they can get caught. Like, no one's saying they're not a good team. It's just I would argue that compared to a lot of the other top teams, they have the biggest risk of getting caught just on the fact of on any given night, you know, one team gets hot from three or they just speed up the pace of the game. Like, I think they're screwed. So I think it's really heavy focus on, like, Houston, the way that they win is they drag people through, you know, deep waters. Yeah. But if they match up with, like, you know, Kentucky, even Florida, Auburn, any team that plays,
they wouldn't see those teams till the final four.
I think the other thing too all of those critiques, honestly, like, yeah, if any team gets super hot versus you, like, as a favorite, you're probably gonna lose. Like, I think these critiques can be applied a lot more generally. They get applied to Houston a lot more. I'm just saying, I think Houston gets way too much flack for these things. I think could harm basically any team. I think they're really good at handling business versus teams that they're better than. I think that they'll be well positioned, and I think that they can win these 50-50 games versus top teams. All right, let's move on from this topic.
I'm noticing. Can we do one blind resume comparison before we move on from the favorites?
Go for it.
All right, y'all. I've got two teams right here. I'm going to give you a little rundown on some of their stats, and you tell me, without knowing who they are, who you think the better team is. All right, these two teams have played. Team 1, W over Team 2. Team 1, 10-6 against the top 25. Team 2, only 4-3. Another point, Team 1. Team 1, 8-0 against Quad 2. Team 2, 6-0. Okay, kind of a scratch there. Team 1, 126.9 offensive rating. Team 2, 123.6. Uh-oh. Team 1, 97.1 defensive rating. Team 2, 88.9. Okay, that's pretty elite. Team 1, number 1 KenPom strength of schedule. Team 2, 29th best strength of schedule. I know y'all know who the teams are because y'all cheated. Without anything, what team looks better from these stats? Riddle me that.
Team one
is the correct answer, Andrew Fox.
I'm fairly confident on who team one is.
And team one, those are your Alabama Crimson Tide. Team two, the Houston Cougs. So I do say Houston's tough, but when it comes to, like, picking favorites and picking your March Madness bracket, you got to nitpick, and it's really easy to nitpick Houston.
Would this Alabama not have the same nitpick?
Yeah. I'm not picking Alabama. I'm just saying Houston is not even as good as Alabama, and Alabama's like sixth or seventh in the country. Like,
I would argue that a team like, you know, Alabama, they actually might even run a higher risk, because a lot of the like teams that are better like defensively or like slower paced are going to be lower seeded. Like in the bracket, teams like North Texas, if they make it, could be like hugely problematic for a team like Alabama. Similarly, teams like Drake, where they play a much slower brand of basketball, Alabama just needs one game where, you know, the pace is significantly lower than they need to play at. And I think, like, historically, we've seen Alabama struggle in the tournament when teams get like tighter defensively. And they can't run the pace the way that they do all regular season.
It's a fair critique. It's fair. All right. I think it's time we move on to talking about some of our dark horses. So teams that are going to be in like 5, 6, 7 seed range that could potentially go on a run to the Final Four and maybe even have a shot at winning it all. And to get that kicked off, let's do another quick blind resume. All right. Team number one, overall 22-9 on the season. Team number two, 24-9. Okay. Team number two, point for you. Team one is 5-2 against the top 25. Team two is 1-4. Team one is 5-1 against Q2. Team two is only 4-3. Team one has a 117 offensive rating. Team two is 125. Team one has a better defense, 94 defensive rating compared to team two's 96. And team one has a stronger strength of schedule in KenPom. So to me, I don't know about y'all, team one seems clearly better, being 5-2 against the top 25 compared to team two, who's 1-4. And who is that team one? Those are your UCLA Bruins. And team two, the weak Big 12 Texas Tech Red Raiders are 1-4 against the top 25. What a shocker. They are not good. Okay, I'm not going to go at Texas Tech anymore. We've already talked about it. Big 12 is not as good this year. Big 12 mid, Houston mid. But those UCLA Bruins, they are tough. And that blind resume, it meant to show you Texas Tech is more mid than we think, and UCLA is a lot better than you think. Now, you probably have not seen a lot of UCLA this year, and that is fair, because they kind of started the season off really, or actually mid-season, they really tanked, had like a 4-game losing streak. Since then, they are so back. This team is just better than we think. They're going to be a 6 seed in March Madness, and they're going to be a 6 seed that someone is going to hate to see in the Sweet 16 or even in the second round. Like, this team has a really good offense, 39th best in the country. They shoot well from three, and their best player, Tyler Bilodeau, that dude is just tough. He is so tough. He's kind of like off-brand Cooper Flagg, 6'9" white dude, can hit threes. He is shockingly good at posting up. He just creates so much space when he gets on the block and can score so easily at will when he's matched up on a smaller defender. I think there are a lot of flaws with UCLA. Like, they've dropped a couple of really bad games, but I just think they have like enough offense and then a great defense that they are going to give some teams a lot of trouble and have the potential to go on a little run.
I don't think I can have too many complaints about that take. I am looking at their roster and wondering where some of that big depth is behind Tyler Bilodeau.
Yeah, okay. So it's kind of come on in the second half of the season. Like, are you talking about like big depth in terms of like,
like front court, like, okay, forward center?
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so it's Ade Mara, this white dude who's like 7'3". He did not play much in the first half of the season, and he's been playing like a ton since then. Whenever he plays like 20 minutes, they like win the game. He's gone out a couple times with like injuries, I think, because he's a little frail. But he is so good defensively. And like, when he's out on the court with Bilodeau, like, they are a huge team, because their other best option, Eric Daly, is 6'8". So you have a front court of 6'8", 6'9", 7'3". Like, in college basketball, that is so intimidating size-wise. So, like, their defense, I would not be worried about. Like, their defense is going to be good in March. It's just whether or not they can, like, put together enough offense to kill, like, a giant, like we've been talking about, because they have the 15th best defense in the country. So I think that, like, obviously UCLA should not be a favorite, and I'm not saying, like, everyone should go rush to pick UCLA as the champion of their bracket or put them in the Final Four. I just think this team is very undervalued. when we look at their resume and like everything they've done and some of the teams they beat. They have wins over Gonzaga, Wisconsin, and Michigan State. Like, they can beat really good teams, and they are like a good team in March, I think.
I think for my dark horse, I've gone on a little bit of a different route. I've taken someone who I think is stronger offensively and has more of that scoring guard depth that I feel like is something that's almost more important when you're looking at a dark horse compared to their defense. So I've gone with Louisville from the ACC. They have five guys averaging 12+, led by two guards, Chucky Hepburn and Terrence Edwards Jr., who averaged 16+. As of recording this, Chucky hit a game winner last night to advance them through in the ACC tournament. And I just love teams that can that have high-level guard depth. They've got four guards who are their four leading scorers, and they're getting, not only are they getting points from these guards, but they're getting rebounds and assists too. Their leading rebounder is a guard, Javon Hadley. And then Chucky Hepburn is their leading playmaker with six assists. So I just feel like this guard depth can be a really, really, really powerful thing come tournament time when teams are getting into foul trouble, potentially, and you're putting a lot of pressure on people to make big shots.
I think it's interesting you have Louisville as your underrated team. I actually had them as my overrated team coming into this. I feel like first of all, they're in the ACC. Like, their resume just isn't that good for me, to be honest. Like, they're 1-4 against ranked teams. Their only win came early on against Indiana. Like, they've lost to Tennessee, Ole Miss, Duke, Kentucky, Georgia Tech. They do have, like, I don't know. Like, their guard depth is really nice, and their guards are really high level. But for me, like, their front court is pretty bad, I feel like, compared to comparable teams, like, around that range, like, in terms of seed level. And they get pretty much double the points from guards that they do from forwards. They're also not a very good three-point shooting team in general. Like, I don't feel like they have a ton of guys that can really space the floor a lot. And they do have a nice defense. They have the 23rd best defensive rating. But I think overall, just the dependency on guards to come through, like, you're going to be relying on a lot of shot making. And if they need, like, tough shots, but they also can't shoot the three, I just don't know if that's, like, a favorable combination going into the tournament.
Well, I look at their guards, and they're all decent to slightly above average three-point shooters. So I do think that's a fair point. But to your point about the ACC, I think a dark horse in general is the couple of teams from the ACC that are not named Duke that get into the tournament. You've got Clemson, Louisville, potentially North Carolina. I think those are teams that we are underrating because the ACC is having a down year.
Yeah.
But I still think they're playing extremely high level basketball throughout the season. They're not having like a bunch of nights off per se, because these ACC teams are still competent basketball teams that can knock off some of these higher level teams as well.
Yeah, I like the pick. I think there are obviously some concerns about Louisville, like what Andrew said of how they just have not been able to beat ranked teams for the most part, but they are on a 10-game win streak right now. And like you said, like having a bunch of like guards who can score, it's kind of a recipe to go on a run in March and like get like a hot streak, and all of a sudden your team is just bombing threes and you knock down a couple of giants.
And not only is that a 10-game win streak, that is one loss since Christmas.
Yeah, that's crazy.
That is
that's crazy.
Only one loss by 7 points to Georgia Tech. They've won the rest of their games. Their last loss besides the Georgia Tech game came on December 14th against number five ranked Kentucky by 8 points. So I think this is a team that's just been on fire and is just not getting the credit that they deserve because they're playing some of these weaker ACC teams, which I think have been a bit underrated this year.
Yeah.
I think that's fair.
Let's get in one more dark horse, and then we'll switch gears and go to even bigger underdogs with our Cinderella picks.
So my dark horse for this upcoming March Madness is actually Gonzaga. I think because it's been kind of a weaker season for them compared to in the past, a lot of people have been sleeping, but I'm awake, I'm wide awake, I'm caffeinated. They have a 25-8 record this season. They're 3-3 versus ranked opponents. They beat number 8 Baylor by almost 40 in the first game of the season, and I know it's not as great of a win now, but at the time it looked really nice. They also beat Indiana and they beat St. Mary's, who they are 1-2 against this season. Against other ranked teams, they had close losses to Kentucky, UConn, and UCLA. And despite their 3-3 record, their point differential in these ranked games is plus 51. And even if you take that Baylor beatdown out, they're still plus 13. So they can play these good teams close. They do have a couple of unfavorable losses at Oregon State and versus Santa Clara, but those are both Q2 losses, so they don't have any like absolute stinkers like Q3, Q4 losses. They're number 9 in KenPom. They don't really play a great schedule, obviously, like their conference is pretty weak, which I know I just knocked Louisville for, but I think if you have Gonzaga as like a 6, 7, 8 seed, I do think they could cause problems in the first, second, even third round. Obviously, I don't think they have the talent or depth to go all the way and get to like the Final Four or something. But I think with their offensive engine in Graham Ike averaging 17 points per game, and then Ryan Nimhard averaging close to a double-double facilitating, I think they have a decent starting five. A lot of them can space out, and they do have the potential to cause some problems. The biggest knock against them, I would say, is they're very hit or miss defensively. Like, they're either clamping up or they're pretty much in no man's land trying to defend. So it's kind of a mixed bag. I think if they get hot, they could definitely win 2-3 games in this tournament. But I'm not going to lie, they could also just, like, lose in the first round. Like, I'm going to be completely honest.
Yeah. It's actually so funny you mentioned that, because I was going to say St. Mary's. Mm. Because I actually think, like, not that they're comparable, but, like, obviously their schedules are pretty comparable. They're in the same conference. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, St. Mary's just looks so good. And, like, obviously they do have some, like, more questionable losses, I would say. But at the same time, just the way that they play basketball and the way that they pace basketball, I think lends itself to more of like a, you know, dark horse run than Gonzaga, but I could see both of them.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting with these WCC teams. I also had Gonzaga as well, because when I checked KenPom and realized that they were top 10 in KenPom, I was like, whoa, did not expect that, because I was like, isn't Gonzaga having a down year? But they're still very efficient, and I think when they're playing their best, can beat anyone. And yeah, the Gales beat them twice this year. So I think both teams could definitely surprise some people. All right, let's do a blind resume again, and then we'll transition into our Cinderellas. So team one has an overall record of 22-9. Team two's overall record, 25-6. Team one went 9-7 in quad one, so pretty good. Team two, 1-1. Didn't have as many opportunities. Quad two, team one went 4-2. Team two went 5-4. And then team two had one Q3 loss. Team one had no Q3 or Q4 losses. Team one's 30 in KenPom. Team two is 32 in KenPom. And then in terms of offensive efficiency, they're very similar with team two having a slight edge, and in defensive efficiency, very similar with team one having a slight edge.
Does team two just play nobody? They are one. Like, they've had 11 quad 1-2 games. What on earth?
Yeah, they haven't played a ton of great teams.
Okay. But I like their like standings otherwise. They are very comparable.
Yeah.
Who are the teams?
All right, so team one is Michigan, and team two is VCU. So when I was looking, I was watching a video earlier today, and basically it kind of had teams ranked based on like a lot of their underlying statistics and what seed line they should be on off that alone. And VCU, based on those stats, should be like a 5 or a 6 seed, but they're going to be like an 11th seed in the tournament. So I see them as a Cinderella that can make a lot of noise. I know, Max, you were thinking similar thoughts. So if you want to take it away and talk about why we think VCU could be one to watch.
I'm going to go back to something I just talked about with Louisville. This team is absolutely loaded in terms of their backcourt.
Yeah.
They have four guards averaging 10 plus points a game.
Whew.
And typically have three of them on the court at once. And they all complement each other's skills. They're not all just like big time shot makers. Some of them are really, really good at slashing and getting to the basket. Max Scholga is their leader. He is a great playmaker and scorer. And I think just the way their guards fit together and the way they can rotate is something that's really helpful for them on offense. But then it's even more helpful on defense because they are pressing full court about a third of the time.
This sounds like it's going to be so fun to watch.
And they force turnovers like no one else. And they are pressing even in the half court. They are man pressing like all the time up in everyone's face, making you make mistakes. And then they're getting out and running. But one thing, when they do get out and run and they get into the half court, they are taking 47% of their shots from three and making them at about an average rate, which is something that is a bit concerning, but these guards and their bigs are super aggressive at offensive rebounding as well, which can kind of make up for some of that lack of three-point shooting.
I'm going to be real here, Max. I feel like that is not even a weakness. Like, in general in basketball, like, over-reliance on the three-pointer is, like, obviously usually not great, especially when the way you're like generating them isn't something that's like overly reliable. But when it comes to March Madness, like they only play one game. It's not a 7-game series. When you're like trying to go on a run and like playing a team who is like just objectively better than you, like playing the variance game and just chucking up three pointers is like a way a lot of like good teams get upset. Like, I think this is something that kind of works in VCU's favor. If they do like make it out of those first like couple rounds and they play some like elite team, like I could see them knocking off just about anyone with that kind of volume if they're able to go on a hot streak.
Yeah, and that is a fair point. I'm concerned about those off nights, and yeah, they don't and when they have an off night and you can see it in the first half, they do not care. Their confidence, although this can be a good thing, is unwavering, so they just keep shooting. They will shoot threes like no one else. And I think if you come up against a really good rebounding team, it's going to be tough for your offensive rebounding to really make up for that. But given certain matchups, I definitely think VCU can make more than just a 1 or 2 game run. I think they could knock out some of the best teams in the country. I like it.
Similarly to that, this is actually pretty funny because I think two potential Cinderella teams, one, they need to play their way in. So they're right on the cusp, but I think if they get in, you could see them make some noise, is North Texas. They basically have to win.
Oh, yeah.
The American, just with the way that the SEC has fallen. But if they do, defensively, same with Butler. So those were my two potential Cinderellas. They just play such a defensive brand of basketball where they, if they have a good night, can, you know, really drag some of these faster teams into really deep waters. And if, like, honestly, they match up with a team like Alabama, if they slow them down, I could easily see like a huge upset like that. Where it's almost the opposite of Houston, where Houston can get caught by like a team playing really fast. North Texas and not Butler, Drake, I meant.
I was going to say Butler.
I don't know why I said Butler. Drake, both play really, really defensive, slow pace of basketball. I think they're all top three in, like, the slowest. Them, North Texas, and Houston are the three slowest playing teams in the country. And I think that they run, like, they have the opportunity to drag a team that plays really fast in the really deep waters. Like I said, I could see them pulling off an upset against Alabama on the right night. You know, 9 times out of 10, they lose that game. But I think the whole point of a Cinderella is teams that put themselves in a good opportunity to create an upset. And North Texas, not only like the defensive like prowess, they're also the best free throw shooting team in the country. So you get lucky one night, I could easily see either of those teams making a little bit of a run.
Yeah, I really like the North Texas pick. I mean, also just because they've been there like before. They've been in the tournament like, what, probably like 3 of the last like 6 years or something. Like, they have been a really good team consistently. And like, I feel like they're just due at some point to like get there and then go on a run and get hot.
Well, I think even with Drake, like, it's hard. Based on, like, you know, their competition being significantly less. But at the same time, like, they've done it the entire season where they play such a great defensive brand of basketball that I could easily see them playing like a really fast team in a slow game that they're able to steal. And I could see them going on a run like that. They get hot defensively. I could see them winning a few games.
Yeah, I like it. All right, let me give y'all one more Cinderella real quick. A little bit of a shout out from the Big South. I want the High Point Panthers in my bracket, baby. All right, this team, let's be real, they're probably not going to go on a run, but if they do, it's going to be so sweet. The reason I think High Point could do it, they just won their conference tournament championship game. If you watched it, they were down 15 in the second half and then just caught absolute fire and smacked Winthrop off the court, 29-5 on the year. Some of their like underlying metrics are not great. They are really poor defensively, but this is like the formula that works in March of like teams getting really hot in the conference tournament and then carrying that momentum. NC State last year probably wouldn't have even been in the tournament with an at-large bid. They win the ACC and they make the Final Four. Cardiac Kemba in 2011 went on an insane run in the Big East tournament and then takes UConn to the Natty. Like teams that go on a run in the conference tournament and like have a defining moment like High Point just have of making this big comeback, like that gives you so much fire, so much momentum. They are a really good offense, 27th best. Yeah, they probably won't go on a run, but the streakiness factor is just incalculably in their favor right now. I like High Point to knock off someone big early.
I think that's a good thought process. I also think it's important to mention like seeing's not out yet. You know, the five versus 12 rule, there's always 12s.
Oh, absolutely.
That knock off five. So I think when we see the bracket, like I wouldn't be surprised if some of these picks end up like aligning with that.
And that's probably where a High Point will be, a 12 or 13, I would guess.
Right now they are listed as a 13, but I would expect them to potentially move up after some teams lose.
I like it. Give me the Panthers.
Cinderellas are always like my favorite part of the discussion because it's just absolutely so exciting. So switching gears here, we're going to do a quick PAA and promotion, talk about some women's basketball, and then wrap up with some predictions. You should know, K-True is updating its website, and we want your feedback. Let us know what you think. How do you use our website? What kind of features would you like to see? Is there another radio station that does it better? Send your thoughts in an email to webmaster@ktrue.org. And tune in to Vest Code, where music and fashion collide, serving the latest runway tracks and industry news for lunch every Tuesday at noon. Missed the show? Follow Vest Code on Spotify for weekly playlist updates and never miss a beat again. All right, let's talk about the women's bracket here. I think that this is one of the most exciting women's basketball seasons we've seen. Obviously, the game has gotten a lot more traction over the last 5 years or so. And this year is so exciting because as I was preparing for this segment, there were 10 legitimate teams that I think could make the Final Four that have the star power, have the resumes, have, you know, the skill sets to go really far in the tournament. Usually I feel like that number's a little bit slimmer. I think this year we'll see a lot more parity in the women's game, more upsets. Like, we don't have an undefeated team going into the tournament this year, which is kind of unusual. South Carolina, who's currently the favorite, has 3 losses. UConn has 3 losses. UCLA has 2 losses. So things are a little bit more open this year. So with that, I kind of just wanted to go through the top contenders, give a quick rundown, and we'll kind of do a quick discussion on them and then make some predictions.
So, I like it.
Okay. Excellent.
Okay, wait. Yeah. I feel like we should talk about first the best team, who I would probably pick, USC, Juju Watkins. For the casual women's basketball fan, like, this is the team you know. Juju Watkins, so tough, so good in the State Farm commercials. Is this not the favorite? Are we not taking USC over anyone?
For me, no.
Okay.
I think USC, I mean, they'll be a one seed in the tournament. Obviously, they're very good. I think they're kind of definitely cemented themselves as a top four team this year. But this, I think, speaks to how deep the field is. I think you're right. I think USC is a very strong team. Obviously, Juju is the highlight, somebody that they know that they can count on to create a bucket, to come up with tough shots. averaged 26 points in the Big Ten tournament.
God.
And the team as a whole is 13-2 against quad one teams. I think at times, though, they can be too reliant on Juju for production. They also have in games been a bit messy at times with turnovers, and I think their rebounding is a place that can catch them off. To me, the strongest team is South Carolina, which obviously they're the reigning champs.
The other USC.
They're the reigning champs, exactly. The other USC. And one thing that just doesn't get talked about enough is South Carolina is 10 deep. Like, it's unreal how many good players, like we were talking about this with Duke, a sign of a team that you feel like you can count on a lot in March is one that just has crazy depth, which South Carolina definitely does. They obviously have great coaching and tournament experience under Dawn Staley. I think they've had, I would have to look it up to see, to fact check this, but they've had one of the most, if not the most difficult strength of schedule this year. They haven't lost to any quad two through four teams. And there were a lot of naysayers heading into the SEC tournament, but the way they absolutely steamrolled people in that tournament.
Beating number one Texas by 20 in the championship game, nuts.
Yeah, I think that that just goes to show that when this team is at its best, I think that they are the best, without question. Obviously, they have three losses. They've lost to Texas. They've lost to UConn. They've lost to UCLA. But I think that when this team is at its height, they're the ones to beat.
All right, Chloe, I got one more question. I'm doing a little research now, and I feel like there is a clear favorite instead of South Carolina. In my infinite women's basketball knowledge, why are we not saying UConn, who beat South Carolina by 30 a couple weeks ago and is on like a 10-game win streak themselves, and every one of these games has been 20-plus points?
Yeah, I think UConn is a great pick. They haven't had as much competition because they've played in the Big East.
They've beaten ranked North Carolina, ranked Ole Miss, ranked Louisville, lost by 2 to USC, smacked South Carolina, smacked Creighton again.
Yeah, Creighton's not that good.
Creighton's ranked.
They're fine. They're fine. But, I mean, UConn is a great team. Obviously, they lean on their backcourt stars with Paige Beckers, AZ Fun, and Sarah Strong.
Future Dallas wing Paige Beckers.
Most likely, yes. Dallas is going to be high in that draft. But I think their loss to Tennessee, that was probably the worst loss that any of these top upper echelon teams have had. Obviously, Tennessee's not a terrible team. They might even still be in the top 25, but on the lower end of the top 25. But I think one of the things that got exposed in their game was their lack of front court depth and experience. They kind of have had struggles. They don't have great post play. They don't have great rebounding. So against teams that have a lot of size, like UCLA is a terrible matchup for them, just because of what Lauren Betts does inside. They just have, I would say, a bit more weaknesses from a skill set level than what I see in South Carolina. But I think you can totally make the case. That's what's so exciting about women's basketball this year, is that you can make a case for any of these four teams and even beyond to some of the other teams like Notre Dame, who's taken some losses recently but has had an excellent season and has three strong stars. TCU's had an awesome season. There's just so many teams that could go on and on and on that have had really great stretches this season. So I think it's really exciting, and I'm very excited to stay tuned and watch what happens. We are running out of time, so we are going to quickly go into predictions here. Brandon's giving me a face because I think he's pretty excited.
Oh, boy. No way. No.
The selection steers stand before the iron bracket, its slots soon to be filled with the chosen contenders as the time has come once again. The realm strands on the edge of chaos and glory. The selection seers have whispered their choices to the winds, and now the bracket is soon to be forged in dragon's fire. Let us speak of the great houses that shall wage war upon the court. The great houses are strong, but beware the lurking wolves and cunning foxes. For in this tournament, the weak may rise and the mighty may fall. House Kansas, the Jayhawks of the West. look off to stand at the peak once more. Their banners wave high and their warriors are battle-tested, but lo, they have fallen much times before. Will they claim the crown or shall they be felled by fate's cruel hand? The House of St. John's. Once cast aside to the shadows, they rise again. Under the watchful eye of old warrior Pratino, they wield both steel and cunning. Their banners may yet reach the final battlefield, but will this be the year the storm finally comes? You speak of sorcery, but the House of Duke has long mastered the dark arts. With warriors bred for this very dance, can Prince Cooper return the devils to the top of the throne? Strength is not without experience. House Yukon has walked this path many times before. Oh, so can they successfully defend the throne? Yet you all forget the true peril of this dance. The undone houses, the ones you dismiss, who among you foresaw the great historical consequence of House Loyola, or the cunning ascent of House FAU. Beware, it's time. The march is here.
No AI was used in the production of this show. That was all us. All us. All right. Let's just predict. We are so out of time. I don't know what any of that was. Brandon almost cried when he was talking about the Johnnies. Yeah. Let's get after it.
Way too emotional.
Women's bracket. Give me the UConn Huskies to win. Everyone's about to steal my pick after I cooked in the women's basketball segment and pointed out how much of dogs they are. But y'all go ahead.
Yeah, that was a great comment. I'm taking UConn too.
As much as I wish I could take my hometown Longhorns, I'm taking USC, but not Juju Watkins USC, the Gamecocks.
I will be taking UConn.
I will also be taking UConn.
I got South Carolina.
I like it. All right, let's do the men's Final Four before we give you our men's winner. I'm going to be a little basic. Give me the Blue Devils, Auburn, Bama, and Houston. Bunch of one seeds, because that's what it'll probably be.
Yeah, I don't really agree with that. I think Auburn I have in the Final Four. Clemson, I think they're built for this tournament. Duke, I do like, but I'm worried about, you know, Cooper, if he is actually going to come back. But I do have him for my Final Four. And then lastly, you know, the Red Storm, give me St. John's.
I'm just going to start shooting. Give me my Mormon brothers, BYU. They're heating up. The time is now. Utah, I'm here for you. Give me Auburn, Jani Broom, my GOAT, Sparty Party, Michigan State, and the Terrapins of Maryland.
I'm going to head to the swamp. Give me Florida, and then St. John's and Michigan State, two of the best coach teams in the country, and then the best defense in the country, Tennessee.
I'm going off similar vibes. I'm going Florida, then I'm taking Auburn, Houston, and Clemson.
I got Houston, Auburn as my ones. Clemson, already talked about, underrated quality team. And then my ringer is going to be the Zags here.
All right, and it's time to pick our champion. I want Prince Cooper to raise the flag. Give me the Duke Blue Devils to host another banner.
I desperately want there to be a storm led by Rick Pitino, but I don't think it will happen. I think they can make it to the Final Four, but I think Auburn is just too good. Give me Auburn.
Jani Broom is approaching retirement age and may need a cane to complete this tournament, but I do believe in his last dance, he's going to take Auburn to the glory.
Auburn, Alabama, Tennessee. Florida's the best team in the SEC, and Florida will win the entire thing.
They can leave on wheelchairs, but they'll leave as winners. I'll take as Auburn. Oh my
God. David with the one-liners. You know, to all the haters, I'm hoping Houston gets its revenge, just like Virginia did, just like my Nova Wildcats did in 2016. This is the year that they break through. Give me the Cougars.
And let me get one more closing prediction before we head out. I want Hanson IM Soccer by a million. The playoffs are starting soon. Andrew Fox is so tough. Max is so tough. We are winning. It doesn't matter who we play. Hanson IM Soccer to the moon. All right. That is the show for this week. You can listen to us every Saturday at 8 a.m. right here on KTRU 96.1 FM or stream all of our episodes anytime by searching for KTRU Sports on iHeartRadio, Spotify, or if you're poor, Amazon Music. To stay in the loop, go ahead and follow us at KTRU.sports on Instagram and at KTRU Sports on TikTok. We've always got exciting stuff in the works, and we don't want you to miss out. If you have a question for the staff, please feel free to DM us on either of those platforms or drop a note to KTRU.